Érettségi vizsga angol nyelvből. Hallott szövegértése emelt szint.
Welcome to the listening component of the Matura examination. The listening material and the instructions are recorded on this CD, and the tasks and instructions are printed in your test booklet. There will be three tasks, and every recording will be played twice. The task will begin with some music, and then you will hear, and you can also read, the instructions to the task. This will be followed by a silent period on the CD in order to give you some time to look at the task in your test booklet before hearing the text. Then we will play the recording in one piece. After another short silent period, we will play the recording for the second time, but now in shorter sections and with breaks between the sections in order to give you enough time to write down your answers. Please note that the first item in each task, marked with a tick, is always an example. The whole test is exactly 30 minutes long. Good luck. Task 1. In this section, you will hear some little-known facts about Charles Darwin, the famous English naturalist and geologist. Your task will be to decide whether the following statements are true, false, or we do not know, because the text does not say, and write the appropriate letter in the boxes on the right. Write A if the statement is true, write B if the statement is false, and write C if the text does not say. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then, after a short pause, you will hear the recording again, but this time we will play the text in shorter sections to give you enough time to write down your answers. A means true, B means false, and C means the text does not say. Now look at the task in your booklet. Now listen to the recording.
Armed with truth, we're stepping out. Come join the worldwide party. Charge your glass and face the world. We'll drink a toast to Charlie.
Oh. Everyone knows about Charles Darwin and his theory of natural selection. But did you know that once he ate an owl just for kicks? Here are some facts that very few people have heard about Charles Darwin. Darwin was an inquisitive man. When he saw strange animals, he often wondered what they would taste like. The difference between Darwin and the rest of us is that he actually ate them. While he was at Cambridge University, Darwin joined the Gourmet Club, which met once a week to eat animals not often found on the menu, like hawk and heron. His enthusiasm for weird food, however, broke down when he tried an old brown owl, which he found indescribable. In Patagonia, South America, Charles ate a puma, which he said tasted like veal, and an ostrich-like bird called a rhea. Actually, Darwin had been looking for this particular species of rhea, only to find that he had been eating one all along. He sent back the uneaten parts to the Zoological Society in London, which named the bird Rhea Darwinii after him. Another little-known fact about Darwin is that he attended Edinburgh University to become a physician like his father, but soon abandoned the idea because he couldn't stand the sight of blood. So he decided to study theology instead and become a rural cleric, which would fit his hobby of being a naturalist just fine. Most people know that Darwin set out on a 5-year voyage on board the ship HMS Beagle, but who knows that he almost missed this opportunity. The captain of the HMS Beagle, Robert Fitzroy, was about to embark on a survey expedition to South America, but he was afraid of the stress and loneliness of such a voyage. Indeed, the previous captain of the ship had committed suicide. So Fitzroy asked his superiors for a well-educated and scientific gentleman companion to come along as an unpaid naturalist whom he could treat as an equal. The professors at Cambridge recommended the 22-year-old Charles Darwin for the trip. Darwin and Fitzroy got on well, but later Darwin found out that he almost didn't get picked for the voyage. This was what Darwin wrote in a letter about this incident. Afterwards, on becoming friends with Fitzroy, I heard that I had run a very narrow risk of being rejected as the Beagle's naturalist on account of the shape of my nose. Fitzroy was convinced that he could judge a man's character by the outline of his features, and he doubted whether anyone with my nose could possess sufficient energy and determination for the voyage. But I think he was afterwards well satisfied that my nose had spoken falsely.
Now listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
Armed with truth by stepping out, come join the worldwide party. Charge your glass and face the world, we'll drink a toast to Charlie.
Everyone knows about Charles Darwin and his theory of natural selection, but did you know that once he ate an owl just for kicks? Here are some facts that very few people have heard about Charles Darwin. Darwin was an inquisitive man. When he saw strange animals, he often wondered what they would taste like. The difference between Darwin and the rest of us is that he actually ate them. While he was at Cambridge University, Darwin joined the Gourmet Club, which met once a week to eat animals not often found on the menu, like hawk and heron. His enthusiasm for weird food, however, broke down when he tried an old brown owl, which he found indescribable. In Patagonia, South America, Charles ate a puma, which he said tasted like veal, and an ostrich-like bird called a rhea. Actually, Darwin had been looking for this particular species of rhea, only to find that he had been eating one all along. He sent back the uneaten parts to the Zoological Society in London, which named the bird Rhea Darwinii after him. Another little-known fact about Darwin is that he attended Edinburgh University to become a physician like his father, but soon abandoned the idea because he couldn't stand the sight of blood. So he decided to study theology instead and become a rural cleric, which would fit his hobby of being a naturalist just fine. Most people know that Darwin set out on a 5-year voyage on board the ship HMS Beagle, but who knows that he almost missed this opportunity. The captain of the HMS Beagle, Robert Fitzroy, was about to embark on a survey expedition to South America, but he was afraid of the stress and loneliness of such a voyage. Indeed, the previous captain of the ship had committed suicide. So Fitzroy asked his superiors for a well-educated and scientific gentleman companion to come along as an unpaid naturalist whom he could treat as an equal. The professors at Cambridge recommended the 22-year-old Charles Darwin for the trip. Darwin and Fitzroy got on well, but later Darwin found out that he almost didn't get picked for the voyage. This was what Darwin wrote in a letter about this incident. Afterwards, on becoming friends with Fitzroy, I heard that I had run a very narrow risk of being rejected as the Beagle's naturalist on account of the shape of my nose. Fitzroy was convinced that he could judge a man's character by the outline of his features, and he doubted whether anyone with my nose could possess sufficient energy and determination for the voyage. But I think he was afterwards well satisfied that my nose had spoken falsely.
That is the end of task one. Task two. In this section, you are going to hear some interesting theories about the origin of some English idioms. Your task will be to circle the letter or letters of the correct answer or answers in the boxes on the right. Please note that in this task, both answers may be correct. However, there is always at least one correct answer. This means you will have to circle one or two letters. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then, after a short pause, you will hear the recording again, but this time we will play the text in shorter sections to give you enough time to write down your answers. Now look at the task in your booklet. Now listen to the recording.
You probably use lots of idioms every day that don't make literal sense. If you ever thought long and hard about why you say something in a certain way, you could probably make a correct guess. However, some English idioms are so crazy and unusual that it's impossible to guess where on earth they originated from, unless you know their history. When we have to deal with a difficult situation that can't be avoided, we use the idiom, bite the bullet. This idiom comes from the olden days when doctors were short on anaesthesia, or there was no time to administer anaesthesia before emergency surgery during a battle. The surgeon made patients bite down on a bullet in an attempt to distract them from the pain. If you're caught in the act of doing something wrong, you're caught red-handed. This saying originated because of a law. If someone butchered an animal that didn't belong to him, he had to be caught with the animal's blood on his hands to be convicted. Being caught with freshly cut meat did not make the person guilty. We use the idiom, eat humble pie, to show that we're sorry for a mistake we made and we feel humiliated. During the Middle Ages, the lord of the land would hold a feast after hunting. He would receive the finest cut of meat at the feast, but those of lower standing were served a pie filled with the entrails and innards, in other words, with the organs inside an animal, known as umbles. Therefore, receiving umble pie was considered humiliating because it informed others in attendance of the guest's lower status. If we don't want to do anything about a situation, we pretend not to notice it. We turn a blind eye. Actually, the British naval hero, Admiral Nelson, did have one blind eye. Once, when the British forces signalled for him to stop attacking a fleet of Danish ships, he held up a telescope to his blind eye and said, "I do not see the signal." He attacked, nevertheless, and was victorious. If you give somebody the cold shoulder, you treat them in an unfriendly way. In medieval England, however, it was regarded as a polite gesture. After a feast, the host would let his guests know it was time to leave by giving them a cold piece of meat from the shoulder of beef, mutton, or pork. If you say something that should be kept secret or private, you spill the beans. In ancient Greece, beans were used to vote for candidates entering various organizations. One container for each candidate was set out before the group members, who would place a white bean in the container if they approved of the candidate, and a black bean if they did not. Sometimes a clumsy voter would accidentally knock over the jar, revealing all of the beans and allowing everyone to see the otherwise confidential votes. When a difficult situation ends suddenly, before you have to do or say something that you do not want to, you can say, with a sigh of relief, "Saved by the bell." As scary as it sounds, being buried alive was not a very uncommon occurrence. It accidentally happened on a number of occasions. People who feared to meet such an awful fate were buried in special coffins that connected to a bell above ground. At night, guards listened for any bells in case they had to dig up a living person and save them by the bell. Fortunately, or unfortunately, it happened a couple of times.
Now listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
You probably use lots of idioms every day that don't make literal sense. If you have a thought long and hard about why you say something in a certain way, you could probably make a correct guess. However, some English idioms are so crazy and unusual that it's impossible to guess where on earth they originated from, unless you know their history. When we have to deal with a difficult situation that can't be avoided, we use the idiom, "bite the bullet." This idiom comes from the olden days when doctors were short on anaesthesia, or there was no time to administer anaesthesia before emergency surgery during a battle. The surgeon made patients bite down on a bullet in an attempt to distract them from the pain. If you're caught in the act of doing something wrong, you're caught red-handed. This saying originated because of a law. If someone butchered an animal that didn't belong to him, he had to be caught with the animal's blood on his hands to be convicted. Being caught with freshly cut meat did not make the person guilty. We use the idiom, "eat humble pie," to show that we're sorry for a mistake we made and we feel humiliated. During the Middle Ages, the lord of the land would hold a feast after hunting. He would receive the finest cut of meat at the feast, but those of lower standing were served a pie filled with the entrails and innards, in other words, with the organs inside an animal, known as umbles. Therefore, receiving umble pie was considered humiliating because it informed others in attendance of the guest's lower status. If we don't want to do anything about a situation, we pretend not to notice it. We turn a blind eye. Actually, the British naval hero, Admiral Nelson, did have one blind eye. Once, when the British forces signalled for him to stop attacking a fleet of Danish ships, he held up a telescope to his blind eye and said, "I do not see the signal." He attacked, nevertheless, and was victorious. If you give somebody the cold shoulder, you treat them in an unfriendly way. In medieval England, however, it was regarded as a polite gesture. After a feast, the host would let his guests know it was time to leave by giving them a cold piece of meat from the shoulder of beef, mutton, or pork. If you say something that should be kept secret or private, you spill the beans. In ancient Greece, beans were used to vote for candidates entering various organizations. One container for each candidate was set out before the group members, who would place a white bean in the container if they approved of the candidate, and a black bean if they did not. Sometimes a clumsy voter would accidentally knock over the jar, revealing all of the beans and allowing everyone to see the otherwise confidential votes. When a difficult situation ends suddenly, before you have to do or say something that you do not want to, you can say, with a sigh of relief, "Saved by the bell." As scary as it sounds, being buried alive was not a very uncommon occurrence. It accidentally happened on a number of occasions. People who feared to meet such an awful fate were buried in special coffins that connected to a bell above ground. At night, guards listened for any bells in case they had to dig up a living person and save them by the bell. Fortunately, or unfortunately, it happened a couple of times.
Listen. That is the end of task two. Task three. In this section, you are going to hear a radio program which promotes an adventure holiday. Your task will be to write one word in each of the gaps below, using the exact words that you hear in the recording. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then, after a short pause, you will hear the recording again, but this time we will play the text in shorter sections to give you enough time to write down your answers. Now look at the task in your booklet. Now listen to the recording.
Hello and welcome to Travel Bug. I'm Jill McLean, and in the studio with me is Julian Green, an experienced travel agent who works for a London-based tourist agency. Julian, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me, Jill.
So, what kind of holiday do you recommend today?
Well, it's a mixed activity week in the Picos de Europa, which is Spain's first national park and which runs the entire length of Spain's northern coast.
Is it a kind of adventure holiday?
Well, it is definitely not for holiday makers who like basking in the sun all day.
Does that mean that some previous experience in different sports is necessary?
No, but you need to possess a spirit of adventure, and you have to be moderately fit.
Tell us more about the programmes, Julian.
Sure. We pick up our guests at Bilbao Airport and transfer them to our hotel, which has views up to the highest peak in the national park. Day two is a day of canyoning, which means travelling through canyons using a number of techniques, such as walking, climbing and jumping. Day three is the classic Kerr's Gorge walk, which has been described as the jewel in the crown of Spanish hiking. On day four, we go canoeing, along the famous River Sella, which is one of the most popular destinations for this type of activity. On day 5, our guests can choose from optional activities such as climbing or caving or going sightseeing in the beautiful coastal towns of Asturias. On day 6, we take a spectacular trip in a cable car to the heart of the Picos de Europa. From here, you can enjoy breathtaking views of the surrounding peaks and the valley far below. In the afternoon, we visit the medieval village of Potes. On day 8, we transfer our guests back to Bilbao Airport for their flight.
This sounds like a wonderful and challenging itinerary to follow. There's just one tiny and insignificant detail that we haven't talked about. How much does the whole trip cost, Julian?
The price is £1,200. Needless to say, everything is included. Meals, accommodation, transport, and a tour leader. Actually, not everything, because this price does not cover travel insurance. You have to arrange it yourself.
Julian Green, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Now listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
Hello and welcome to Travel Bug. I'm Jill McLean, and in the studio with me is Julian Green, an experienced travel agent who works for a London-based tourist agency. Julian, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me, Jill.
So, what kind of holiday do you recommend today?
Well, it's a mixed activity week in the Picos de Europa, which is Spain's first national park and which runs the entire length of Spain's northern coast.
Is it a kind of adventure holiday?
Well, it is definitely not for holiday makers who like basking in the sun all day.
Does that mean that some previous experience in different sports is necessary?
No, but you need to possess a spirit of adventure, and you have to be moderately fit.
Tell us more about the programmes, Julian.
Sure. We pick up our guests at Bilbao Airport and transfer them to our hotel, which has views up to the highest peak in the national park. Day 2 is a day of canyoning, which means travelling through canyons using a number of techniques, such as walking, climbing and jumping. Day 3 is the classic Cairns Gorge walk, which has been described as the jewel in the crown of Spanish hiking. On day 4, we go canoeing along the famous River Sella, which is one of the most popular destinations for this type of activity. On day 5, our guests can choose from optional activities such as climbing or caving or going sightseeing in the beautiful coastal towns of Asturias. On day 6, we take a spectacular trip in a cable car to the heart of the Picos de Europa. From here, you can enjoy breathtaking views of the surrounding peaks and the valley far below. In the afternoon, we visit the medieval village of Potes. On day 8, we transfer our guests back to Bilbao Airport for their flight.
This sounds like a wonderful and challenging itinerary to follow. There's just one tiny and insignificant detail that we haven't talked about. How much does the whole trip cost, Julian?
The price is £1,200. Needless to say, everything is included. Meals, accommodation, transport, and a tour leader. Actually, not everything, because this price does not cover travel insurance. You have to arrange it yourself.
Julian Green, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
That is the end of task 3, and also the end of the listening exam.